His fingers were calloused, tough from the guitar. He had his own life now, his secret life. It humbled her suddenly to find he was so much his own person. Of her, yes, always that, but no longer hers.
"I'm glad to see you," she said quietly. "I was worried, Paul. We all were."
He looked at her, his eyes darkly angry and suspicious, and turned away suddenly, blinking back tears.
"I stink," he said.
"Yeah,"
Nora agreed, "you really do." He scanned the lobby, his gaze lingering on Bree, who stood at the desk, and then on the swirl and flash of the revolving doors.
"So, I guess I'm lucky he didn't bother to come."
David, he meant. Such pain in his voice, such anger.
"He's coming,"
Nora said, keeping her voice even.
"He'll be here any minute. Bree drove me over. Flew, really."
She had meant to make him smile, but he only nodded.
"Is she okay?"
"Yes,"
Nora said, thinking of their conversation in the car.
"She's okay."
He nodded again.
"Good, that's good. I'll bet Dad's pissed off."
"Count on it."
"Am I going to jail?"
Paul's voice was very soft. She took a breath.
"I don't know. I hope not, but I don't know."
They sat in silence. Bree was talking to an officer, nodding, gesturing. Beyond, the revolving door turned and turned, flashing light and dark, spilling strangers inside or out one by one. And then it was David striding across the terrazzo floor, his black shoes squeaking, his expression serious and impassive, impossible to read. Nora tensed and felt Paul tense beside her. To her astonishment, David walked straight to Paul and grabbed him in a powerful, wordless hug.
"You're safe," he said. "Thank God."
She drew a deep breath, grateful for this moment. An officer with a white crew cut and startling blue eyes crossed the room, a clipboard under one arm. He shook Nora's hand, David's. Then he turned to Paul.
"What I'd like to do is put you in the slammer," he said conversationally. "A smart-aleck boy like yourself. Don't know how many I've seen over the years, boys thinking they're so tough, boys who get let off again and again until eventually they hit real trouble. Then they go to jail for a long time and find out that they're not tough at all. It's a shame, but it seems your neighbors think they're doing you a favor and won't press charges about the car. So, since I can't lock you up, I'm releasing you in the custody of your parents."
Paul nodded. His hands were trembling. He shoved them in his pockets. They all watched as the officer tore a paper off his clipboard, handed it to David, and walked slowly back to the desk.
"I called the Bolins," David explained,
folding the paperwork and tucking it into his breast pocket.
"They were reasonable. This could have been much worse, Paul. But don't think you won't be paying back every red cent of what it will cost to get that car repaired. And don't think your life is going to be very happy for quite a while. No friends, no social life."
Paul nodded, swallowing.
"I have to rehearse," he said. "I can't just drop the quartet." "No,"
David said.
"What you can't do is steal a car from our neighbors and expect life to go on as usual."
Nora felt Paul so tense beside her and so angry. "Leave it," she found herself thinking, seeing the muscle move in David's jaw.
"Leave it alone, both of you. That's enough."
"Fine," Paul said. "Then I'm not coming home. I'd rather go to jail." "Well, I can certainly arrange that," David answered, his tone dangerously cool.
"Go ahead," Paul said. "Arrange it. Because I'm a musician, and I'm good, and I'd rather sleep in the streets than give it up. Hell, I'd rather be dead."